Well, I put stuff on the board again. I don't know where to start. I had all kinds of ways to start my lesson today, and I threw them all away. We're actually back to where we were 2 weeks ago in this class. And we were doing, and that was a little bit out of step. That was Revelation 13, so we did 12 last week. Now we're up to 13, except that to do 13, you'll have to also have to do 17. So, you know, kind of like, it's butchering up the book of the Revelation pretty much. But when you're on a subject, you just can't do that, you know, expositional. You got to deal with the subject as it is dealt with in the book. So that's why we get into 17. Now we're going to talk about the resurrection, or the question about the resurrection of the Antichrist. And I want you to know, I'll say again what I said the other time. This is not a big issue. Why are you talking about it? Well, because we know the basics of the Bible already. So there are these questions that come up, and I said, we're going to do this study in Revelation, take the mystery out of it. Well, we're going to put some back in, probably. Some things you probably can't for sure settle, but this is one of these mysteries in the book of Revelation that I'm attracted to, these unsolved, what I would call unsolved questions in the scripture. And you know, you find people on both sides of the issue, and maybe three sides of an issue, and you just sort of think with our view of scripture that this ought to be discoverable, you know, by normal people. And so that's why sometimes I'm driven to this, and because I know what the basics of the scriptures are, and you do too. So these questions keep coming around, and like I say, they really don't affect anything else. They may, but so they're kind of allowed to have different viewpoints and so forth, so without ever settling on anything. So on the issue, let me tell you up front. On the issue of the Antichrist, there are three positions. The empires, by the way, beast and the Antichrist are never equated in the scripture. They're not said the beast is the Antichrist. The only way you know that the beast is the Antichrist is because of the context of where that word beast is used. And that's why it becomes somewhat difficult, because we don't know for sure it's referring to the Antichrist or is the beast that seven-nation empire. So remember now, beast is never equated with the Antichrist unless the context determines it. So we have one option, is that these beasts, and some of them refer to the Antichrist, refer to the empires, the seven empires, seven and plus eight, whatever you want to call it, six actually, and then seven plus one. So it's consistently the beast or the empires is the one that's in this question about being fatally wounded and being resurrected. That's consistently, that's the position number one. That's consistently, it's always the empires. It doesn't mean there's not an Antichrist there, not saying that, but it refers to the empires. The second option would be that the beast that's resurrected, the Antichrist. Now, there the beast is told or is assumed to be the Antichrist, and it receives a wound, it says, as if fatal. So you have two options here now. He is, there is a real death. There's actually another one, I forgot to put it up there. There's a real death or a feigned death. And then the questions that go beyond this, if it's under the real death, A, you actually have two choices there. Did God raise him from the dead, or did Satan do it? Okay, so you have choices there. So what I'm going to present to you this morning, in a feeble way, I'm sure, is going to be number one. I won't die for it. Don't kill me if you don't agree. I mean, I'm just going to show you, and probably not in a very good way, what you have to do with Scripture to make that work. And I don't mean manipulate Scripture, the way you got to understand Scripture. As I'll tell you, if I don't tell you later, I'll tell you now, that the problem we have with dealing with number one as the empire that is fatally wounded and resurrected is that we tend to judge our reaction to the reestablishment of the Roman Empire, which is what I'm going to say, we have no way to measure that in our own culture. We're looking for the rapture. We're not looking for a way to rebuild the world on its humanistic system. I'll get into that when I do this later. All right, so that's the position I'm going to present to you, but I want you to know that friends are going. You're going to be my friends. I hope I'm going to be your friends. If you disagree, that's fine. It's not that kind of issue. I just want to repeat that. But I do want to go through it and show you what you not have to do, but you do to make it work. And it may not work for you. And you say, well, Don, you sure gave it a good shot, but it didn't convince me. And I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that. Because, again, it's not that kind of issue. But the only reason I think I want to talk about it or these issues come up in the scripture is my little saying is you never know where the truth is going to lead you. Conversely, you never know where the error is going to lead you. So if I take the error route here, whatever the error is, I'm not sure where it's going to take me because I don't know. And to say, well, it doesn't really matter if I'm wrong here. Well, it does matter because the error will take you in the wrong direction. So anyway, all that to say what I'm going to tell you. Now, the other thing I'm going to tell you is that when you go to the Preacher Conference, we do every year, and I look forward to it. The day it shuts down, I'm looking forward to the next one because they're so good, that they read papers to you. And people say, I can read those papers at home. That's what Gil says. I can read those papers at home. Why do I have to sit down and have those guys read it to me? Which is true. So what I'm going to do to you is for you today is read a paper to you. Because there's no way that I could put this into PowerPoint and make any sense of it. And some of these things are finely reasoned. And when you put it in print, you know, in sentences, it works. But if I talk to you, you know, we lose track of what we're doing. So I'm going to read my paper to you. And the paper is not very well organized because it's a project because I started with it some weeks ago. And I've added to it. And when you do that, it gets kind of mushy, you know. Because if I did it with one setting, I knew everything I knew at the beginning, how I was going to write it, I'd write it in order. So I've got a couple appendixes on the end, which are sort of not afterthoughts, but sort of some conclusions or some issues that were not dealt with earlier. And I only have 35 minutes to do this. Then. All right, so we see on the board here the seven kingdoms. Same thing on the side over there, six kingdoms. Then there's a break at the seventh. And the seventh is the Roman seventh and Antichrist eighth. And the break is there's their resurrection between of the nations between Roman 6 and Roman number 7. And so I think you're familiar with that. So I'm going to just go into my paper. And I don't know if I should apologize for reading to you my paper or not, but I know sometimes it's kind of boring. But I did start out putting a PowerPoint, but it was just so much work that, and I didn't think it'd be any better than just doing it this way. Can you read that? Kind of? There are some seats in front. All right, so I'm good. In front here, I might skip over some parts here, but for the papers, I have to include all of it. Okay, the person of the Antichrist springs into prophecy from Daniel 9, who in the last 70 weeks of years appears, makes and breaks a peace and protective covenant with Israel. He perpetrates a genocide against the Jewish people approximately halfway through the last 7 years of the Great Tribulation. Also in Daniel, we have laid out, head to tail, as it were, the great empires of the world who, from Daniel's time, have contact, influence, or are in proximity to the family of Abraham, the Jews, we call them. So we have, Daniel gives the first empire. I just don't want to go through this, but there we have it listed. These empires succeed each other. There are no gaps between them. However, the Roman Empire expires without an empire to succeed it. That's after 6. It is proverbial that Rome fell by brutal force. The Huns were the brutal force people. Attila the Hun, you ever heard of him? Horrible, brutal attacks. All right, so the brutal attacks made possible by the rot from within Rome, 476, is usually the date that Rome fell is used. The date used to for the demise of the Roman Empire is in dispute. You might want to use a different date. Like in Constantinople finally fell as a small holdout on the Bosphorus in AD 1453, the last Christian of the Christian called Byzantine Empire spots fell. Whatever date you use, there's no doubt that the great Roman brute as an organized empire ceased to exist. It died. Now don't have a good way of doing this. Daniel repeats the prophecy, and we don't need to go through that, I don't think. Finally, Daniel gives another list in 11. Let's try to skip over this front part. And we have those there. Don't repeat myself here. Nowhere else in the Old Testament, are the kings laid out in prophecy this way. In our day, in retrospect, it is easy to see the fulfillment of Daniel's word to an amazing accuracy. The Roman Empire still lays fallow, waiting for its resurrection, to its place in history as the villain to destroy the Jews. Rome has never been kind to the Jews. The ruins of the Roman Empire lies on the border of the great European nations, who to this day continue to lead the Western world in anti-Semitism. Adolf Hitler of New Germany considered himself the head of the Third Reich. Charlemagne was the first of the Holy Roman Empire. Hitler made no effort to hide his true feelings and intent even unto his last breath. However, in Revelation, we have the most complete listing of the Jewish significant nations given in the Bible, not in Daniel's, in Revelation. Daniel started with his time, Babylon. John in Revelation starts with the empires after the flood, who were in contact, again, with influence or in proximity with the family of Abraham. Now, John writes historically about the empire. He says that Rome was, Rome is not, dies in prophecy. Rome is about to come, comes alive in prophecy. He said, the beast you saw was and is not and is about to come up out of the abyss and go to destruction. And those who dwell on the earth whose name has not been written in the book of life from the foundation of the world will wonder when they see the beast that he was and he is not and will come. Now, I'll say this later, but just notice why there is a wonder. The wonder is that he was, that he is not, and will come. Okay, now that word wonder, we'll use that later on. So I just wanted to think about that a little bit. The wonder is that he's disappeared and is coming back. Now we're not talking about the Antichrist here, we're talking about the nations. The wonder is that it's the nations that are coming back, or the nation that's coming back. Okay? Now, just remember that. I'll mention it later. I'm going to kind of underscore that for you. Now, John gives further explanation. He says, here is the mind which has wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sits. And they are seven kings. Five have fallen, one is, and the other has not yet come. And when he comes, he must remain for a little while. So the seven heads, mountains, kings are seven nations or empires strung together. So we have the numbering here in Daniel, Revelation that's similar to Daniel, except that we have it in one complete listing. Number six there, Greece, one in after Greece. There's one in John's time that's Roman. Roman is the beast nation with the head acting as a ferocious animal was. And Roman dies, is not, and the line of empire discontinues. And then what is to come, which is the seventh, the Roman revival, and the line is reestablished. Then we have eighth, the beast is the Antichrist with his empire, but ends in destruction. Daniel 2, 44, 45. I'm not sure to make this thing go forward. Okay, so we'll just repeat that. Won't do that again. Now, more elaboration regarding the beast nation. Now, the ten nations which you saw the ten horns which you saw are ten kings, have not received their kingdom. This is going to be number seven. And they receive their authority as kings with beasts for 1 hour. These have one purpose, to give the power and authority to the beast, which is going to be number eight. To this point, we have a handoff with the seventh to the eighth king and his kingdoms. The king is identified with his kingdom, and the kingdom is identified with the king at the end. So the beast and the kingdom become the same thing. It's like he's the head of the kingdom, so the kingdom is like we have kings identified with their nations, presidents with their country, so forth. When Alexander the Great died, his kingdom died, and the geography was reconstituted. The same was true for Nebuchadnezzar and Babylon. There were successors, but when the founder died, their successors cannot carry on the kingdom because of internal conflicts. A division of geography was inevitable, but there was continuity. That's the point. Okay. Jumps too far. Sorry. The resurrection of the seventh head. There's some way to take that page break out. It would be helpful. I'm sure there is, but I'm not going to stop. Do it. The resurrection of the seventh head. We have visited about chapter 17. Back in a passage. I forgot to give you the passage address. We have visited about chapter 17, which, because of its content, I think, is a controlling passage. But an important passage underlies the question of the Antichrist, which is in Revelation 13, 1 through 3, passage 3, and then 12 through 15, which I think are the difficult ones. So the text, the dragon, Satan, stood on the sand, this is verse 1 of 13, the dragon, which is Satan, stood on the sand of the seashore, Gentile humanity, or humanity generally. Then I saw a beast, Roman revived to be the seventh, the beast, now I think is the Roman revived to be the seventh, coming up out of the sea, out of the Gentile humanity. You know, parenthesis is what I've added, of course. Having 10 horns, kings, and historic seven heads, seven historic kingdoms. And on his horns were the 10 diadems, and on his head were blasphemous names. So he's not a good guy by any stretch of the imagination. And we'll skip verse 2 because, like the animals, and the dragon, Satan, gave to this Antichrist his power and his throne with great authority. Now we're getting to the problems. And I saw one of his heads as if it had been slain, and as if fatal wound was healed. And the whole world was amazed and followed after the beast. Now some suggest that Revelation 13:3 states that the Antichrist, who is slain... Slain does not refer to the discontinuity of the world empires after the sixth. This is the other argument. It follows for them that he, the seventh head, the Antichrist, and as the seventh, is slain and raised from the dead, the Antichrist himself, personally. The resurrection of the Antichrist is so spectacular, so it goes, that the world will go after him, and he, now the eighth, resumes his quest for world domination. That's typically how this is answered by more than one person. Did I miss it? Okay. Now, however, judgment call, it is more natural to see the near fatal wound being attached to one of the seven kingdoms. The near fatal wound, one of, must be at the end of the sixth, since it dies, since the kingdom is reconstituted, that is, resurrected, kingdom the seventh. The seventh kingdom has a 10-nation alliance and so forth. And the monarchical phase of it goes into the eighth. Now, his death, that is the discontinuity and resurrection, reestablishment, then is referring to a national entity, Rome. That's my number one up there, rather than a resurrected king. Also notice that the wound is as if fatal. This injury is not fatal. So that's why if I have to choose over there, if I choose can't have number one, I will go to number two, number B. I think this rules this whole idea out that he's actually dead, because it says as if. I know there's one argument about that, but I don't think that's a difficult one to deal with, which I won't deal with now because we don't have time. All right, so it's as if fatal. Now, it does say the whole world was amazed and followed after the beast. Now, so some suggest, as I've said, the amazement would come from observing the Antichrist's resurrection and authority over death. That alone would make the unrighteous earth dwellers, willing followers. And it's hard to deny that a bodily resurrection would not be awesome and would elicit a great response, but there is another explanation for their amazement. Now, this is kind of funny. I mean, it's funny to me. Not to you, probably, but it's to me. I have option A and option B. You know, like them do the movies, you know, you buy the movies and you see it, and then you find out there's another version of it. They have a different ending on it. You know, ever heard of that? The two endings on it. You can buy the movies sometimes with the two endings on the same. Dr. Zhivago has different endings on their movie. If you don't like the first one, you might like the second one. I give you two endings here. Now, I hope they're not totally opposite each other, but I came up with one, which is A, which you guys heard on Wednesday. And then I came with a better one, I think, which will be B, which you guys have not heard yet. All right. Don't get out the tar and feathers yet. All right, consider it an awesome lesson from modern history. All right, Germany as a nation did not exist until 1871. I'm talking about, why are these people in awe? How can that be? And they want to say, well, it's a resurrection from the dead is the awe. I'm saying it's a revival of the nation is the awe. Okay, that's just so you understand what the difference is here. So Germany as a nation did not exist until 1871. Finally, after hundreds of years, the city-states of Central Europe, the Germanic people, were united into one nation by Bismarck. New Germany, attempting to find a place among the nations, found itself in a census World War I, and it is senseless. I'm watching it now as a series. It is incredibly senseless. It was a brutal war. Germany had developed superior weaponry, and they faced antiquated military tactics. Remember, they're the new nation on the block, and they were showing the muscles, and you know, even Russia was, you know, not going to be a problem for them. And they developed this terrible trench warfare that entered in the carnage of a generation of men in Europe. When the United States entered the war was paused by an armistice, but no victory. The Allied powers dictated the terms of peace to Germany. The intention of the Allied powers was to teach Germany and the world a lesson and to make them pay so they would never threaten the world peace again. I'm not exaggerating in my tone. They meant to demean the Germans by disarming them when they required reparations, killing any hope of any economic recovery. All this was extremely, extremely humiliating for the German people. The German people were in a deep funk. In the middle of this milieu, a young man, unhappy with the outcome of the Versailles Treaty, begins to agitate and organize for a rebirth of Germany. In 1933, Adolf Hitler came to power. With a growing economy, he built the Autobahn, a national glory. He rebuilt the illegal military. He intended to restore its nation to to rival all other world empires. Borrowing the Messianic Kingdom idea from Revelation 20, he called his Third Reich the Third Reich, and it was supposed to last 1,000 years. September 1, 1939, Germany attacks Poland. Germany is not only back, but with a vengeance. Using its blitzkrieg tactic, Germany is on the edge of the unthinkable world conquest. No European powers could stop her. The world stood by awestruck at the quickness and the effective deceit of their leader. Neville Chamberlain from England negotiated with Hitler, saying, "We will have peace in our time," September 1938, 1 year before, only to be crossed by Hitler when Hitler invaded Poland 1 year later. Only Britain attempted to assist the Polish, but no one could stop Hitler. Soon, Austria, Czechoslovakia, Poland, France, Belgium, Holland, Denmark, and on were part of the rising empire. Now, the German people were euphoric and awestruck, joyfully followed Hitler. After all his plans for Germany and the world were idyllic and nearly biblical in expectations, the family with happy children, a mother who smiles lovingly as she cares for them, a father is a happy, productive worker bringing home what is needed. Everyone is extremely happy because they have a cottage by a stream, a Volkswagen in the driveway, and the Jews have been exterminated, in addition. And the euphoria could not be higher. Every school child loved the Führer. Now let's go back. Love the Führer. Where are we here? Now let's go back, reread Revelation 13:3. And I saw one of its heads, as if it had been slain, and its fatal wound was healed. And the whole world was amazed and followed after the beast. Of course, there's a breakdown on the point-by-point comparison, but that in the German comparison, the world was awestruck with the prospect of a unified people and a peace greatly prosperous. That is not a stretch. That's what they were looking for. After all, world unity has been the objective of many empires, switching over now to our application. After all, world unity has been the object of many emperors, and in modern times, the political left, all hoping that someone would rise that could join the world in one unified and holistic people. For Germany after 1933, this hope began to take shape. The euphoria in Germany cannot be overstated. With the new charismatic leader, now all of this was within their grasp, even in their lifetime. Now the application, with the rise of the Antichrist, the world finally can imagine that which has been so elusive, world unification. Now anything is possible. Having suffered 3.5 years in the contest with God's seals and trumpets, They believe that peace and prosperity of in a unified mankind is now possible. We're talking about in the tribulation. Now they have the right leadership in the Antichrist. What euphoria. Now the whole world was amazed, and they followed after this beast. This whole idea that is represented by these empires is what mankind has sought for from the get-go, from Garden of the Tower of Babel. All right, now that was A. If you don't like A, we'll try to go to B. B is different, but not much. Now, the passage in Revelation 13, 12 is the most challenging. We should stop and read these passages, and they come up here. It's most challenging to counter the theme of the resurrection of Antichrist. It's so challenging, it's almost depressing. The text is as follows. He, that is the false prophet, exercises all authority over the first beast, the Antichrist, in his presence, and makes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast, the Antichrist, and the empires he represents, whose fatal wound was healed. I will skip one verse, verse 14. And he deceives those who dwell on the earth because of the signs which was given to them to perform in the presence of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image. Now, telling those on the earth to make an image to the beast. Not of the beast, to the beast. Who had the wound of the sword and has come to life. Now, think back a little bit. When Rome fell, it fell strongly with rot from within, but the last thing was with brutal sword from without. Not a big deal, but it's interesting that the word sword is used here, and that's how Rome actually ended. And it was given to him to give breath to the image of the beast, so that the image of the beast would even speak and cause as many as do not worship the beast to be killed. So no doubt that there's an image being made here. Okay, and I don't want to get sidetracked here. Now my comments. In Revelation 13, 14, and he, Satan, deceives those who dwell on the earth because of the signs which it was given him to perform in the presence of the Antichrist, the beast in this case, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to or for, but not of, the beast. The statue of the beast who has seven heads. Now this image is a statue that represents the kingdoms of mankind. Okay? Kingdom of the statue of the beast. The beast is not the Antichrist, because I just leave it there. The beast who had the wound and of a sword has come to life. Verse 8 of 17 says that these earth dwellers will wonder what they see when they see the beast that he was and was not, is not, and will come. So we see the wonder again is not over the resurrection of the Antichrist. It is the resurrection of the beast, which represents these nations. It says, when they see the beast that he was, that he is not, and will come, tells me it's talking about the kingdoms. According to the text, the wonder is not about the Antichrist recover, but the lost empire, their empire that disappeared, it is back. Now, this is a hard concept. I always say it, the harder it is to explain something, more likely you're off track. But this is a hard concept for us, for me, to explain to you. So let's try. This is a hard concept for us to understand, that they'd get so excited about the revival of this empire. Okay, it's hard for us to accept this because we no longer think, we don't, as believers, do not think like the lost thinks. Yes, they are desperate. They are desperate today. Have you noticed how desperate they are? The rise in opioid use, the anger against what's right in the political arena. And then I think about John Lennon's song that went on and is still played probably every day on radio stations today. Now, you know the song called Imagine. What are we going to imagine? Imagine there's no heaven. Now, remember, this is not you guys speaking. This is the world talking. Their hopes and their expectations. Okay? Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us, above us, only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. Imagine there's no countries. It's hard to do. Nothing to kill or die for, and no religion to imagine. No religion to imagine. All the people living life in peace. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us. The world will be as one. Imagine no possessions. I wonder if you can. No need for greed or hunger. A brotherhood of man. Imagine all the people sharing all the world. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I am. but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us and the world will be as one. Now, if you can reduce down the aspirations, what's in the heart of every unbeliever, I have just read it. Now, when the prospect of that coming up appears to be in their grasp, they follow the Antichrist with enthusiasm. Okay, so I ask, why was this song so popular? Why does it strike a sensitive chord in the hearts of the humanists who just can't quite get there? We can imagine that the earth dwellers wonder and are awestruck by the revived beast. We look for the rapture. They want to make the world inhabitable for their kind of depravity. They will be awestruck because they did not expect to ever recover their personal and ideological losses. Remember, the seven of the seals and the trumpet judgments put them in a deep pit of disadvantage. But the prospect of getting their world back via the empire-building Antichrist is great news for the suffering lost. Satan knows even better the losses. He goes, just go back to the Tower of Babel and count the six defeats of empire-building that he's suffered, always being left short of his goal. He feels well the losses he has suffered and is a willing agent, informs his kinfolk, those earth dwellers, of his mistreatment over the millenniums. No doubt he will be the rallying cry, with all opposition squashed or martyred during the tribulation. We had that last week, Sunday morning. We'll talk about it. His plans for supremacy and with the willing participation of the earth dwellers, they quickly accept his leadership while they decry their own loss of 5,000 years of progressive human demonic experimentation. The Image Project is satanically inspired. The Image Project is satanically inspired, is meant to be a memorial to the idea or the effort that has failed him until now. That's why you build an image. But seems to be succeeding now. What does the image look like? Well, I really don't know. It is likely that of, will it have lifelike features? Probably, because many idols have a face and eyes and ears. May it look like the Antichrist? I don't know. It could. It may or may not resemble the Antichrist because the image represents a much larger memorial than just the Antichrist. It represents everything that Satan has ever tried to do in the world through government. So it's remembered as the beast empire that was wounded by the sword, now is revived. Now, according to Revelation 17:8, the wonder is not the alive Antichrist, but the revived empire. Now, look what it says again, 17:8. The wonder when they see the beast. Now, we don't have any definition of who this beast is, so context has to tell us. We know the beast here is not the Antichrist, because the Antichrist, he was, and he is not, and he will come. That doesn't describe the Antichrist. It describes the empire, especially the sixth one. So just note, I just said that. Just note, the Antichrist term is never used of the beast to identify it. The context is the only guide here. It must be the empire beast, since it alone can be described as was, is not, and will come. Now, is there any surprise, then, that the golden image built by Nebuchadnezzar to honor the coming empires given to him by Daniel, and he was the best of them all, the head of gold, would in the end reappear as an image representing now historic empires, the aggregate of which we know as the beast of Revelation. The image that caused Daniel and his friends so much trouble now comes back to life, or comes back to their life. In these final days, the satanic empire, the beast who had the wound of the sword, perhaps the Huns as referred to there, has come to life. And it was given to him to give breath to the image of the beast so that the image of the beast would even speak and cause as many as do not worship the image of the beast to be killed. All right. Now that was where I stopped my paper. Then I had other thoughts where I didn't want to go back and mess up my paper. We got a booger on here. So this stuff could have been put in the paper. I just put it all on the end. I didn't know how to actually do it and not mess up the original paper. Where do I want to start here? I'm arguing for a simple plan here. When you seek when the plain sense of Scripture makes common sense, seek no other sense. And to me, it may not seem like it to you, but the most common sense to me is that it's the nations, because that's the only thing that really fits here. But maybe you disagree. Okay, if there is a question about the meaning of Revelation 13, and it's 14, 15, I have it here for you, I think, soon, if you don't want to look it up and have time to look it up. We can get help from 17. So I said 17 overrules or runs or controls 13. 17 is the more developed chapter, which gives the broad details we must consider to control the passage. If this is so, then the question can be answered in a few sentences. Okay, my argument here, which I didn't give you, if you've got a simple solution, you can state your proposition easily. If it's complicated, it takes pages to do it. Okay, now, so I went and looked up Pentecost, who has the view that I'm presenting, and this is how he presents the option. Quote, in Revelation 13:3 and in 17:8, the beast is explained as the composite kingdom. The reference to the healing seems to be the resurgence of the power of the Gentile kingdom that has been dead for so long. That's it. No more explanation. No supernatural rising of people from dead and all that kind of stuff. It's simply the nations. Now, conversely, when you read the defense of those who hold to a slain and resurrected Antichrist, it requires pages and pages of explanation to remedy the problems that arise with the dead and risen Antichrist. To start with is the question about whether the Antichrist actually dies. If he died, he needs a resurrection. If he did not die, then he needs a good agent to convince the world he did indeed die when he didn't die. Secondly, if he dies, how is it possible that he is brought back to life? Assuming this is what is being said, who resurrects the Antichrist? Two options. Two options in the real death option is that God or Satan brings him back to life. Now, if this is the choice, if the choice is Satan, nowhere do we have a clue that God will grant to Satan these kinds of powers. He does give them signs and wonders and fire, but life? And here, that's my stumbling block right there. It seems like certain powers belong to God, the essence of which cannot be delegated. At least two powers are God's and his alone. It is creation ex nihilo, out of nothing, and the creation of life. You might want to add something to it, but those are the two that I know God can't give away. Because if he gives them away, he gives away what he is. So now we have two gods that can do what one God can do. Now, if that isn't confusing to the world. All right, I'll get some more ammunition in a minute here. It may seem that God can do this if he wants to. You know, some say, well, God can do anything he wants to. Is that true? Can God do anything he wants to? We can do anything he wants to, but he never wants to do things that he shouldn't do, right? I mean, he can't sin. We'll say he doesn't want to, but he can't sin. I mean, whatever. All right. Did I lose my place here? Secondly, if he dies, how is it possible that he's brought back to life? Assuming this is what's being said, two powers, here we go. If this is what he wants to do, okay, but he cannot do things that violate the essence, his essence, one of which is the giver of life. Isaiah makes that point about God. God cannot set aside justice, not even for a moment. Nor can he set aside those things that define him as God. He cannot sin without violating his very being. And my verse here is, I am the Lord, he says. That is my name. I will not give my glory to another, nor my praise to graven images. And if the Antichrist is given the authority to raise someone from the dead, God has given away that which defines him. I don't think it's possible. That's where my stumbling block is. One of them. Big one. So God will not give to anyone, idols or demons, the credit for what he does. This is the basis of the unpardonable sin in the day of Jesus' ministry. The idea that the demonic world shares the power of God in participating in the miraculous is blasphemy, according to Jesus. It is a sin for which forgiveness is not granted. If shared glory can be true, the distinction between God and Satan has been destroyed. Perhaps it is the hope of Satan to accomplish this, but impossible for God to participate. This is due to his essential nature. He cannot share his glory or the credit for work done. Thirdly, if the wound is not fatal, this position is relieved of the problem number two. So you can have number three without, you know, fixing number two. You can get rid of number two. But if the Antichrist receives the near fatal wound, surely he could not function as a leader for some time. If he really did get this wound, you know, it's almost dead, so you don't get up and, you know, lead the world the next day. Leader in the critical 3.5 years, second half of the tribulation, could not be absent from any authority. by which he is soliciting the world as its leader, you know, to the one world empire in the second half. Perhaps a small issue, but in any other situation, this problem could not be glossed over. What is left then is that Satan pulls a master trick of deception. Certainly that would be true, but it remains to be shown that that is the best solution. Other deducted ideas include the construct of an unholy trinity to mimic the divine. I'm not going to die on this hill either. To model the resurrected Antichrist who mirrors and challenges the death and resurrection of Jesus. Whether there is any reason to put stock in that idea and it's popular is difficult to determine since it's not explicitly revealed. The Bible doesn't say that. We just deduct it. What's the word? But in the unholy trinity scenario, the beast parallels the second person of the Godhead, thus gives support to the resurrected Antichrist idea. So that's kind of whatever. All right, to point out, as you can see, it takes pages and pages to generate these things, and I've only begun. Now back to the solution. I do not think that this question can be answered by word definitions in only the context of Revelation 13 and so forth. What it may or may not say. I believe, because context is missing, I believe the question must be answered in the broadest context. That's why you must start in Daniel, which is where all significant nations are listed from Egypt to the end of human history as we know it before the kingdom, the great kingdom. Now, those God-challenging nations, represented by the beast, seven of them, nations, empires, become a highly significant subject in the Bible. God has given us many details concerning these Gentile nations because it is in these nations that we find the greatest effort of humanity to subvert the authority of God and subsume for themselves the rights of God. This is not a new conflict. It has been going on since there have been nations. Tower of Babel, for example. Daniel chapter 2 starts out by listing four of these empires, starting with Babylon, ending with Rome, only to find that the stone cut without hands, which was rolling down the mountain, shatters Daniel's described image of the kingdoms. Rome, the Iron Feet, is the last and the most durable of the empires, yet it disappears, and then in its revived form, the glorious king will destroy that human state, never to rise again. I read that passage in there from Daniel 2, 34 and 35 for time. One objection to the fatal wound is happening to one of the seven empires is that the world is amazed at the resurrection and fall of the beast. The only thing that would amaze the world, the people of the world, is the resurrection, they say. A killed human being resurrected to life before the eyes of the world, nothing can be more amazing, it seems. Now, I give you the Greek word here, the amaze and wonder, and you can try to pronounce it. It's a funny word. All right. The word is amazed in Revelation 13:3, and the same word is translated wonder in Revelation 17:8. Same word. In Revelation 13:3 and 17:8, the beast is explained, in both cases, a composite kingdom. The reference to healing seems to be the resurgence of, I'm repeating, the resurgence of power in the Gentile kingdom that has been dead for so long. That's Pentecost and things to come, page 335. Now, I'll repeat again Revelation 17:8. The beast that you saw was and is not and is about to come out of the abyss, goes to destruction. Those who dwell on the earth, whose name is not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, will wonder when they see the beast that he was, he is not, and he will come. It's got to be the kingdom, not the Antichrist. The phrase, those who dwell on the earth will wonder when they see the beast that he was and is not, will come. The grammar states something was before, now is not, but in the future will come. It is clear that in the now period, the empire does not exist, but it will in the future. So the order is was, is not, will come. The wonder is not that Antichrist was. The wonder is not at the Antichrist, but at the empire. And I give you my options A and B already. See, so that's out of order. Now, without the influence of Revelation 3. 13:3, which we've covered, 12 and 15, the wonder and amazement are the same word. If it wouldn't be for the influence of this, all would think the expression he was and is not and will come refers to the personified beast, the kingdom, not the person, would be would not be one man, because his lifetime is short. Only a string of empires fits this description. Rome was, dies out with no continuous replacement, but it will come, and we know that is led by the Antichrist. Now, what remains is to show how the global amazement and wonder can be a reaction of the reappearing Roman Empire led by the same one. Then we have, again, the options of A and B. You go through that again.